5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. Quick word here for Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium because there are tremendous amounts of things for the soccer fan to see. It's the Houston Dynamo. It's the Houston Dash. But how about September 4th, Argentina against Bolivia right here in Houston with Lionel Messi, Angel Di Maria, Sergio Aguero, and company. So Bud Light reminds you, get down there with like-minded individuals. Get over to HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you also get your Dynamo and Dash tickets. Bud Light, longtime supporters of the great game of soccer here in Houston, Texas. I can tell you, going way back, if it weren't for Budweiser and Bud Light, I never would have got on the radio. So personally, I thank Bud Light. All right, that's a perfect segue into, well, for 6 years he had to put up with me on HDNet as we were a partnership covering Major League Soccer. But more importantly, Marcelo Balboa has played in World Cups, has represented the United States, and he joins us now. Marcelo, how are you?
I'd also like to thank Budweiser for the career I've had.
You know what? I'm going to pop a Bud Light right now. Is it, Mr. Michael Carroll, can you bring me in a Bud Light?
Yep. There we go.
Yeah. Well, on, listen, buddy? They've been unbelievable supporters of soccer. It's great to have you on, Marcelo. And just for everybody listening in, Marcelo also, along with Richard Fleming, a part of the broadcast team for the Colorado Rapids. Of course, we know tomorrow night the Dynamo at Colorado. All right, just let's talk Colorado, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here tonight, but just talk to me about this team, because I shake my head sometimes understanding what sort of direction this club is trying to go in.
You know, that's a great question, man. I just do the broadcast. Yep. But from what we were told a few years ago, it's a direction of a young team of the Deshaun Browns, the Shane O'Neills, the Powers, the Cernas. They were going in that direction, Hairston. And then this year, the last 2 years, it's really been revolutionized more into more veteran players. Look at our back line. You know, the back line is as average as 30 and above. And the midfield has gone to more of experienced players. So it's kind of changed. And I think it reflects how the team's doing because of the fact that it's just really, you know, we're in the bottom of the West. We haven't really been able to really, in the last 2 years, get out of that bottom.
Yeah, you have a lot of things going on. You also have a young manager in Pablo Mastroianni who, listen, anybody who jumps straight from playing into a management role or a coaching role, it's going to be a learning process. I mean, Owen Coyle's been in the Premier League, and he admits to me here on the radio all the time that, look, this first year for me is going to be a learning process, and it's all about learning. It has to be very difficult for Pablo Mastroianni.
I think it is. I think it is for any young coach, you know, and I think if you got to look at what he's – but here's the problem I have, and I think a lot of people – and this, I think that's the concern here in Colorado, is that he's gotten more resources than any other coach has gotten in the history of the Rapids franchise. They've gotten him designated players, a young designated player. They brought in a guy like Kevin Doyle. They brought in Pitinari. They brought in Sam Cronin. They brought in Marcelo Sarvis. They brought in Figueroa now. I mean, he's gotten more resources than any other coach in the history of our franchise. So, I mean, I think when you do that, you're expecting to get results.
Yep. Kevin Doyle is one of these resources that's been brought in. And look, people know him from playing at Wolves and Queen's Park Rangers, yep. Crystal Palace, yep. the whole connection there. Also, yep. For the Republic of Ireland. Talk to me a little bit about how he's done as a veteran fitting. I always find it fascinating to see how these guys fit into Major League Soccer. How's he fit in with the Rapids and MLS?
You know what? It's going to take time. When you have a player like that, it's going to take him time to get adapted. He scored a few goals here, and there's been a few games where he's just been invisible. But I also think when you got a guy like that, he's a guy that needs service. You got to put the ball into the box. You got to get him moving into that space. And I think for quite a few games, he just hasn't had the service into the box to be dangerous. You know, the other day against Chicago, he had to drop back into the midfield. Look at the first ball he touches, 48 seconds in. He gets it. He puts it over the top of Chicago's defense. They go down the wing. They score. So, I mean, the guy shows, he's got qualities. We all know he's got qualities. It's just trying to think. I think they're trying to figure out, is he really a point forward as a number 10, or is he more of a number 9 in the midfield? You know, I think that's where the coaching staff's trying to figure things out.
Yeah, he's played 13 games. He's got 2 goals. How is his hold-up play, Marcelo? So you're telling me he's good with the hold-up game. He can check back into midfield.
A guy that plays with his back towards goal, Glenn. Yeah, that's not his strength. His strength is coming into the midfield, being able to receive a ball, turn, face up on the guy, get in behind the line. So I don't think he's a hold-up player that can play with his back towards goal.
Interesting.
That's not his strength.
Dylan Serna, talk to me about him because, you know, with Serna, Powers, you mentioned Shane O'Neill, who's been moved on. Also, Deshaun Brown. You know, when I looked at that 4 set, I was saying, wow, man, Colorado's acquired some great young guys. 2 of them are gone. How are Serna and how are Powers doing? Because I've long time known Powers through his father, Mike Powers.
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at, I think Powers has been a little bit of disappointment this year. And only not for us, but for himself. He hasn't played much. And I think you can see the disappointment on his face. And the same with Serna. I got to say, this is a young player who, you know, last year had a pretty good year, and then this year he's been riding on the bench quite a bit because they brought in Juan Ramirez. You know, you put him in against Dallas, he scores a bomb. He's gotten 3 goals in with the limited playing time he's played. This is a kid, to me, who's dangerous. He scored against Chicago, and this is a kid, to me, the more you play him, the more his value goes up. And just I look at him as a young Vicente Sanchez because he can chop the ball like Vicente. He's not as refined yet and nowhere near it. But being around Vicente Sanchez, you can completely see the attributes that Vicente has are starting to rub off on Serna.
Yeah, why do you think he's not getting more playing time, especially at this part of his career where he seems to be producing when he gets to play? And, of course, it's essential as a young player to be getting games.
Yeah, I'm a broadcaster. I got to say, I don't know why he's not playing. I know he was injured there for a while. He had lower back, but to be honest with you, I think that's one kid that the fans are really dying to see play more just because he brings something different to the table than other guys do. And that's why you saw him play against Chicago. I got a feeling you'll see him against Houston.
He played briefly at the University of Akron. He's only 21 years of age. The other beautiful thing about him for the Rapids is that he's a Colorado kid.
Exactly. Another homegrown player like Shane O'Neill was.
Yeah, wonderful. You've seen the Dynamo this year, Marcelo. Your thoughts on them under Owen Coyle? Now, I've positioned it here on the radio a lot that, for me, it's an overachievement if the Houston Dynamo get to the playoffs. Patience needs to be afforded. He's changed out a lot of players. The team has become more diverse. The structure of the organization is different. It was, you know, it was all Dominic Kinnear before now, and now they have a general manager. A lot has changed here, so I'm saying as long as they end the year on a high note, players developing, the team beginning to crystallize, it's a great year. Now, I know it's dangerous to say that, and fans don't like me saying that it's an overachievement you're going to make the playoffs in a league where only 33% don't.
Yeah. I'll say this. It's interesting with the players they have. I don't think they're overachievers. I think they've got a good, solid team. A little older than the average, but I think this is a team that if and when it does click in together, when you can find a way to start Torres and give him consistent minutes with Giles Barnes, you know, Davis in the midfield, Clark, I'm looking at this team and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, Glenn, it may not be the team of 4 years ago, but it's still a good enough team to get into the playoffs. And again, I think Owen Coyle is learning a lot this year from being in this league. I expect a different Houston team next year, but I definitely think that they've done well for what they've bought, and I think they haven't got what their money's worth yet off Kubo Torres, because we haven't seen him enough.
Yeah, and at some point that's going to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giles Barnes, to me, in the beginning of the year, was one of the most electric players in all of Major League Soccer, Marcelo, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm seeing this team, it's like you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see the Rapids as much as you do. But
yeah.
I thought he was electric. He was a difference maker.
Yep.
He was winning games.
Yep.
He goes off with Jamaica now. And I'm sure everybody, including Owen Coyle, is going, oh, no, he's a Jamaican international. But he goes to Copa America, the Gold Cup, and he's exhausted, and he's trying to reclaim that. And if they're going to make the playoffs, they need him. But talk to me a little bit about Barnes, and you've been in that situation as well, going off of the national team and playing with your club as well.
Well, you know, it's an adjustment because you've played at the international level. It's quicker, it's faster, it's stronger, and you expect that kind of play. Unfortunately, just like everywhere else, when you come back to your league, it's a little slower, it's a little different, and people put more pressure on you that you should be producing more. If you're international for Jamaica and you reach the Gold Cup final, you should be producing more with Houston. And when you're not, then the fans get on you. And then, you know, sometimes national team players, and it happens to all of us, we back off the pedal a little bit and just say, you know what, look at what I've done this summer. You know, I'm a little fatigued, I'm going to rest here. And I tell you, man, it's a long summer for Giles Barnes. It is a long summer it's been for him, so... Listen, in order for you guys to make a run in the playoffs and to get in the playoffs, he's got to come back 110% plugged in and ready to go.
Marcelo Balboa, he's the color analyst for the Colorado Rapids. You know him as a former U.S. international, also was a great player for the Rapids as well. 3-5-4 at home at altitude tells me Dick's Sporting Goods Park is not a fortress. What's going on there? Why are they not winning games at home?
One, I don't like that word fortress.
Okay.
I think it's a silly word because no one in Major League Soccer has a fortress. You know what I mean? Number two, teams have learned this year to come in here and take the game and slow the game down. If you watch what Columbus did, they spread Colorado out. They played it out of the back. They forced Colorado to come get them on top of the 18, and they started finding the holes, getting in between. Then when Colorado, with the numbers, teams have learned, because you quickly hit them on the counterattack, you can catch them on behind. So it's been, you know, it's been interesting. L.A. came in here and took it to Colorado and tried to play their game. They went down 1-0 at halftime. Second half, Glenn, they took the pace out of the game. They slowed it down and brought it down to their level. Short passes, in and out, little intricate passes, boom, goal, boom, goal. I think teams are starting to learn that if they can slow down the game, they can withhold and stand the altitude.
Marcelo, has there been a distinctive way Colorado plays at home? In other words, do they come out with a high pressing game at altitude? Has it wavered? Is there something distinctive about how they play at home, or are they still in some ways trying to figure out how to do that?
I think they're still trying to figure out, Glenn. It's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind. One day they come out and they're pressing everywhere, and then against Columbus, they don't come out and press. So it's kind of been a little bit of inconsistency, and I think that's what's been hurting them a little bit. Listen, they've got good players. Don't get me wrong. They have good players. The problem is here's the problem. We're missing a right back. We just picked up Minor Figueroa, so we don't have in this 4-3-3. In a 4-3-3, your key players are your two outside backs. They have to be able to get into the attack and be a part of the attack, but they also got to have lungs like Chris Henderson to be able to get back and defend, kind of like Kansas City does. We don't have that kind of outside right back. We don't have that kind of attack. So I think that's what slows down Colorado when they get into trouble. So I think they're still missing a few players, Glenn, this year.
Figueroa, what do you think of that pickup? Because he is an older man. He's had an outstanding career, obviously, in England, and has played for the national team. But can he get up and down at that altitude?
He's just getting adapted to Major League Soccer. I'll say this, Glenn. He's 31 or 32. He is a specimen.
Yeah,
he's big. He's muscular. He's strong. I think once he gets adapted to the altitude and the way the Rapids play, I think he could be a short-term solution for the next year or two. At 32, you know, you can play up. You know, most players now are playing to their 36, 37 because they take care of themselves. So he could be a short-term solution, but I think eventually a guy like Dylan Cerner that can get into the attack, if he can learn to defend a little bit, that guy, the way he attacks and gets in, he could be dangerous coming from behind.
Now, statistically, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news for the Colorado Rapids fans, but I think they may be aware of this already. Only 21 goals scored this year, and that's in
oh, yeah.
Western Conference.
Yep.
The next closest team to that is Seattle and San Jose with 20. No, well, I'm sorry. 21 goals. 29, Real Salt Lake would be the next.
Yep.
28, sorry, Portland. So it's a team that's struggling to score goals as I'm butchering this validation of facts I'm trying to bring here to the table. They've only scored 21 goals. That's really what's going on here, and it's the lowest scoring team in the Western Conference. Are they creating chances?
Not enough, Glenn. And when they do create them, they don't create a lot, but they got to be more clinical when they get in front of goal. And they're not creating enough chances, and when they do get in front of goal, they're not being clinical. So when you don't create that many chances, you've got to be spot on to be able to finish those chances. I think there's been games where they've been dominant and they've created, like the other day against Columbus, I think there was 10 corner kicks they had and they didn't score on one. 10.
Wow.
And so I think the problem is, again, for me, it's you're not getting enough service into the box for the players. And when they do get the ball into the box, there's only one or two players. So again, it's still a young coaching staff that's still trying to find their feet.
Marcelo Balboa joining us. Listen, the good news for Colorado Rapids fans, in the case of the Houston Dynamo, they haven't won at Dick's Sporting Goods Park since 2010. Give the Dynamo fans that are listening into this show, give them a little insight into who are some of the players to really watch tomorrow night in Colorado.
Now, listen, that's the thing. We don't know who's playing, but if you go over the last few games, Dylan Cerner will be one I think you have to watch. The other one you got to watch is Gabby Torres. He didn't get to play much in Gold Cup, but the kid, I mean, he's the one that got the assist with Dylan Cerner. Kevin Doyles is a good player. And then from there, I think you got to keep an eye on a guy like Sam Cronin. Strong, he's a leader in the midfield, and he's a guy that pushes the pace and pushes the ball forward.
Marcelo, as always, thank you very much. Say hello to Richard Fleming. I hope you guys have a great broadcast tomorrow night, and looking forward to seeing you down the road in the future. Thank you very much for coming on and talking Colorado Rapids tonight.
Anytime, buddy, anytime. Have a great night.
All right, that's former U.S. international defender Marcelo Balboa. Everybody remembers him from the 94 World Cup here in the United States. We will take a break here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, tonight we end it in tremendous style here. We go down to Guadalajara, Mexico. I would say beautiful Guadalajara, Mexico, the home of many professional teams, including Atlas and Chivas. We go to our good friend Tom Marshall of ESPN FC, who does such a wonderful job of covering the Mexican League. Tom, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show. We're ending it in big style with you tonight.
No, thanks a lot, Glenn, for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right, let's get right into it here with Tuca Ferretti now. He's going to be the Mexican coach on an interim basis. He's the coach of Tigres. We all know his reputation. He's 61 years old. He once said that he would have preferred being a street sweeper than coaching the Mexican national team, yet here he is taking a four-game gig with El Tri.
Yeah, it's a bit of a turnaround. I mean, this is a guy who you know, like you said, preferred to be a street sweeper, that, you know, it bores him to be the national team manager. It's the only job he would never accept. I mean, he's really been harsh in the criticism. And, you know, he's talked about the you know, the games in the United States, the friendlies that Mexico play, being just a waste of time. And he's really been the, one of the most vocal critics down the years of the Mexican Federation. So for him now to come in as the national team coach is, it's bizarre for those of us who have followed the game down here for quite a while. I mean, it really is a bit of a shock to the system.
Who else do you think was really in contention with this? I know Marcelo Bielsa's name was mentioned, but do you ever think Bielsa really was truly interested in taking the Mexico job?
I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult one with Bielsa because, you know, they call him a loco and he is crazy. I mean, it's difficult to predict sometimes. So you're just never quite sure whether he would even be interested. In some ways, you think that he would, but and then others completely not. I think that La Volpe was definitely... return of La Volpe was definitely in the works. I think Chivas owner Jorge Vergara really didn't want that to happen. I think that, you know, I know for a fact Michael Laudrup had his resume on the FMS desk and he was interested. People are talking about Juan Carlos Osorio, who New York Red Bull fans will obviously know. So yeah, I think those are the kinds of names. But you know, it's gone to Tuca Ferretti. And I think the interesting thing is that he was asked if he wanted the job on a permanent basis. And actually, he said no, he rejected it. And then he offered to come in as an interim. And he's actually not even getting paid for these four games. So he's kind of doing it as a favour for the Federation so that they've got a bit more time to kind of, you know, get the right person for the job, which is... It's been a bit of a difficult task. It's not been very simple.
Why would he do that, though? Because certainly, who wouldn't take Tuca Ferretti to handle your team and buy you time, like you said, if you're the Mexican Federation? Why do you think he would do that? There has to be a takeaway for Ferretti, and that could be beating the U.S. to get the team to the Confederations Cup. I got to think that he is still going to be ears if he does well in these four games. And if he does well in four games, I would have to think there's going to be a big enticement laid on the table to him by the Mexican Federation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, I mean, he's adamant that he's definitely these four games, but, he doesn't want the job. But obviously, the pressure's going to be absolutely huge, especially if they defeat the U.S. in style. So I think that, it's going to be very interesting to see how it develops. Obviously, Ferretti, he's got a lot of respect down here in Mexico. He's a very good manager. And I think that, you know, he is someone that kind of deals with the media well. He's very organized on the field, his style-wise. I think the problem for the Federation is if he does well and then, rejects any extension, then obviously it doesn't look great from their point of view because especially if the next person who comes in starts off, you know, not so well. And if he does badly, then it looks bad on the Federation as well. So, you know, it's a difficult one for the Federation. I mean, I don't think they're very well organized. I think that there's a new president now, Decio de Maria. But I don't think it's any different than the old guard. I think it's just basically I don't think much has changed. I think it's basically still the same Liga MX owners with influence, which a lot of people don't understand because at the end of the day, they're business people and not soccer people, which I think riles a lot of people down here. And, I'm not sure... I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of confidence down here that this Federation can do the right job in picking somebody after Ferretti. And I think that with Ferretti, they're in safe hands and there will be pressure to extend his tenure if they get that victory.
He's Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. We're talking to him live in Guadalajara, Mexico. Talk about Tuca Ferretti. Purpose of play, stylistically, what you see with him in Tigres and how that will connect in a bigger way with the Mexican fan.
Yeah, I mean, he's possession-based football, no doubt about it. I mean, Tigres have led the possession charts in the league for the last few years now.
But did Miguel Herrera ever get away from possession football, really? Come on, that's what makes Mexican football, right?
No, this is an exaggerated version.
Okay, all right. It's possession football 3.0 instead of 2.0.
Yeah, and I mean, the criticism of him is style is that the possession doesn't kind of like lead anywhere. It's almost defensive possession in terms of they keep the ball so that the other team can't obviously counter them. And you know, it's basically a 4-4-2 formation. The two central midfielders sit pretty deep. So it is kind of it's definitely not as attacking as Miguel Herrera. It's more reserved. It's more kind of, let's wait and see what the opposition do. Let's keep the ball. Let's kind of, you know, obviously circulate the ball and probe and see where the gaps open up, rather than Miguel Herrera's let's go gung-ho, let's put a lot of players in front of the ball and you know, create opportunities that way. So it is a different style. He likes balance. The key word for Tuca Ferretti is a balanced team, and that's what he's going to look for. Unfortunately, yet again for a Mexican national team manager, he's not got a lot of time to achieve it, and that's the crux of the issue once again for Mexico with this big game against the United States coming up on October the 10th. Can he find a balance in the team? Can he select a side using a very different formation, the one Miguel Herrera was used to that functions and functions quickly?
Well, Tuca Ferretti has been at Tigres for 5 years, still has 3 years apparently left on his contract. Remember, since 2010, Enrique Mesa, my friend Efraín Flores, José Manuel de la Torre, Chapo de la Torre, Luis Fernando Tena, Victor Manuel Vucetich, Miguel Herrera. I mean, Mexico's run through coaches, Herrera and Chapo de la Torre had the longer runs than the other aforementioned great soccer minds, by the way. So if we look at him now and what he's going to bring to this team, you've talked about it. I see something very interesting here, and that simply is sort of everybody kind of positioning themselves for what's best for them.
Yeah, eventually you'd think that something down here has to change in terms of the federation, but you know, I think I've said it before, I think the Mexican national team on the commercial side is one of the biggest national teams in the world. I think it competes with Brazil, Germany, Argentina. I mean, when you talk shirt sales and you talk ticket sales and all this kind of thing, and Twitter followers, Facebook likes, and yeah, you know, all these kind of things that are important in a way. Mexico's one of the biggest nations on the planet, but then on the field it's not, and there's a disconnect between those two issues. And to be fair, Tuca Ferretti, in an interview with ESPN, I think yesterday, he said, you know, the one issue that I've always had with the Mexican national team is that they put the commercial side ahead of the sporting side. And that's why I've been so critical down the years of the federation. Now, it's very interesting that...
But what federation... let me just stop there. What federation isn't putting the commercial side ahead of it these days? I mean, I think the degrees are some that are better than others, but these are all money-making machines. We know that.
Yes, but I mean, you know, the Brazilian national team, if you want, could play all their games in the United States. Or, you know, like you said, there's degrees of doing it, but Mexico's is extreme. I mean, the way they play, you know, the Gold Cup and the Copa America, the way they play five friendlies a year in the United States, you know, there's so many things that go on within the federation. The way that you know, the commercial rights are spread, the way that the television companies down in Mexico have so much control over the national team. The way decisions are made, I mean, it's all business. And it's, you know, just take for one, just the example of who picks the national team coach. I mean, how on earth is it possible that these league owners are the ones responsible in
that's
for choosing?
Yeah, that's the unique, strange thing, that the owners of Mexican clubs have such a say in who's going to be the national team manager. Expand on that a little bit, Tom, because you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a rule by committee where the 18 club owners, you know, have a vote, basically. And obviously the federation will go out and look for candidates. Individual club owners will also go out. You know, there's some active ones like the Pachuca owner and Chivas owner who will go out there and bring up names for the federation. And then in the end, they all vote on it. Now, especially foreigners who come into the Mexican game just cannot understand how people who run businesses, who aren't really soccer people, have any say. So Sven-Goran Eriksson, when he was the Mexico coach, he just couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that he was having to explain to the Chivas owner, a businessman, why he was picking a certain goalkeeper or why he was staying at a certain hotel in Mexico City. I mean, for him, it was absolutely unbelievable. Instead of having a structure where, you know, there's actually people who've been there in charge, who know the game inside out and can kind of, you know, put together a project that's a long-term project with some kind of hard ideas to it. I mean, I think that's badly lacking in Mexico. And but what I think what we're seeing now, Glenn, is that because we've had Mexican youth national team doing really well. I think we're at an absolutely crucial point now for Mexico, where you really need to sort it out, because somebody's got to manage this kind of almost changing of the guard between the older players and the young ones coming through, who have done so well at youth tournaments. And I think it's absolutely crucial if you get someone in who can do that and manage it well, and we give them time to do that, and in a certain ways, regardless of the results.
That was part one with Tom Marshall down in Guadalajara, Mexico. Part two is coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gau Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show here as we continue to roll on. We finish it up tonight with part two with Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. You know, you mentioned Sven-Göran Eriksson. I think that's got to be one of the worst hirings in the history of Mexican soccer. To think that he at that stage was going to be a good fit for them. In Mexico, I mean, that's a bit of an indictment on the Mexican Federation, I think. Ferretti knows the players, knows the league, knows the culture. This could be good. I wouldn't be surprised if potentially, he could end up the full manager if they did well, because they'll throw a boatload of money at him. I don't think there's any question if he does well and gets him to the Confederations Cup. All right, Gio Dos Santos out in Los Angeles strikes up a wonderful partnership already with Robbie Keane. You know, it's really an organic sort of, you put two good footballers next to each other, they're going to play good football. What is some of the thought process down in Mexico of Gio Dos Santos taking the big money, coming to Major League Soccer, and playing in MLS now?
Yeah, I think people are picking up on it now, definitely. I mean, Giovanni Dos Santos, obviously one of the biggest name players down here in Mexico, and you can see on the television, you know, pundits are talking about it, the newspapers got Giovanni in there, so it's definitely had an impact. So there's obviously going to be that group that kind of resists, that think he should have stayed in Europe, that you know, his kind of development and career would have been better off over there. But I mean, my personal opinion on that is that those guys will never be won over, you know, no matter what he does in MLS. He can score three goals every week, and those guys will never ever be won over. I think the only answer Gio can give those people is with the national team. And I think it's really crucial for him that with these games coming up in September against Trinidad and Argentina, and then the big playoff against the United States, I mean, I think it really will show up his critics if he can have a big impact on those games and you know, playing for LA Galaxy and winning games for Mexico. I mean, I think that will be absolutely key if he can do that. But, you know, I think it's, from my point of view, I think it's better that Giovanni's playing, scoring goals and confident when he comes to Mexico. Obviously, it's a much shorter journey as well. Than on the bench for Villarreal or another European team and not getting minutes. I mean, you know, I think it's actually benefiting him right now.
Yeah, and I would throw in with that, Tom, just to add to this whole thing, I think he had so much money thrown at him, he couldn't turn it down. And the other thing is he has an opportunity to really, I mean, just every market he goes to, he can draw, he can be such a big figure here in the United States. I don't think there's any question. This has been an unbelievable signing for Major League Soccer. Eric Cubo Torres, who's on the Houston Dynamo here, you know him so well from Chivas in your city of Guadalajara. He came out and made it pretty clear that, you know, look, MLS is faster than the Mexican League. It's a tough league. He says, quote, in Liga MX, there are players who could be walking or jogging on the pitch. You can look up and take 3, 4, even 5 seconds and nothing happens. Here you have a few seconds with the ball. They're right on you, pressuring you. Now, this quote reminded me once when I talked to the former Chivas manager, Hans Westerhoff, the Dutchman who was in Houston. And he said that every player in Mexico at a young age should be coming to MLS. Now, this was many years ago, and things have changed. Yeah. But already back then, he was identifying that, you know, the pressure that you get in MLS, the physical challenges that you have are essential to combine with the technique and the skill of the Mexican player. So here's Cubo Torres talking about it as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's right. I think obviously, there is a difference in the game, and obviously the Mexican game has always been very, very technical and less on the physical side. So I think that, I think it's not just with MLS. I think that you can pinpoint that very reason for why Mexicans haven't had that much success in Europe. I mean, I think Miguel Layún debuted in the Premier League a couple of weeks ago, and he was the ninth Mexican to make his debut. I think out of those nine, so far we can only say one has had any degree of success, which is Javier Hernández. And why is that? I think it's the same reason that Cubo Torres is hitting on there. It's faster, it's physical, you don't get much time, and you don't get time to use your technique. You know what I mean? So I think Mexicans are struggling, and I think that's the argument for Mexicans, more Mexicans going abroad. I mean, from my perspective anyway. So, yeah, and the other thing, Cubo did get a bit of criticism during the week in an interview, I think, with Univision from Chepo de la Torre, who criticised his training a bit, which was interesting. So I don't know if it was that slightly had something slightly to do with that or not. I doubt it, but always a possibility.
Yeah, and listen, many a good foreign international player has struggled in MLS to catch up to the sort of pace and rhythm and of games here. Now, this is not something I really want to get into a lot, but Cubo Torres' case against him, because you're in Guadalajara, is that still open? Because that's what I've been reading, that it's still open. This case, it dates back to April.
I believe so, but I mean, the way the Mexican kind of legal system works, it's not the quickest. And, these things do take time to work out, and obviously the lawyers will be going back and forth. So, you know, I think we'll have to see how it's resolved. Obviously, it's a difficult situation, but, you know, to be honest, in the press down here, there's not been a lot about it at all since he moved up there to Houston. So I don't think there's anything new to kind of report apart from, obviously, you know, we're still waiting to see what the final outcome is.
Yeah, I've had an opportunity to interview him a number of times, and he's been excellent. I think he's been excellent. He's attempted English. I love the fact that he's such a simplistic player. He's outside of the box. It's 1-2 touch, combine with a midfielder and get into the penalty area where the ball's ultimately going to be. I love that simplicity about his game. I think he's got a great ability to hold play up as well, but he's yet to make his debut in a starting way for the Houston Dynamo yet. Miguel Herrera, tell me where he's going to end up in Liga MX and what's going on with Miguel, because I know he's going to end up getting a job probably by the same guys that fired him from the national team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Club America, obviously, he won a title and reached a final with them. Obviously, he's got a strong link there. But at the minute, Nacho Ambriz is doing very well with America. I think they're in second place. I think they're absolutely destroying teams over the last 3 weeks. They've won quite comfortably. But I tell you what, Glenn, I'll just throw something out there. I'd love to see Miguel Herrera try his hand in MLS.
Yeah,
I think
me too.
Be absolutely sensational.
Me too. I think that's a great call. I think he'd be unbelievable now. The question is where and who, because there's very few, there's limited foreign managers in this league. I mean, we have one in Owen Coyle here in Houston who's really adapted very well. Now, would his personality adapt to this league? Because there's a whole bunch of red tape when it comes to how you acquire players and classification of players. Would he be able to handle that? Would he be patient enough to handle that? Because we all know he's got a temper problem.
Yeah, but I think that Miguel Herrera is the type of coach where he'd leave that kind of stuff to kind of a general manager. And obviously he'd have his opinions on who to bring in, but I think Miguel Herrera just loves coaching and he loves being with the players. He's almost like one of the boys. He's definitely like that kind of manager who doesn't kind of separate himself from the squad. So, you know, I think he could do a good job. I think he's a very good manager. I mean, and I think it'd benefit his career so much after this national team, because you know, after leaving Club America and winning the championship there and then going to the national team, it's like, I don't see how his career can really advance. So, I mean, I'd love to see him try it up there. I think there's so few Mexican managers that try to do anything outside of Mexico. And I think, you know, I really do think the domestic game suffers for that. And look, how much money have MLS put into Giovanni Dos Santos? And I think it's worth it, don't get me wrong.
Well, listen, Herrera would draw. Yeah, he would
imagine
be.
Imagine Herrera.
Yeah, he'd be a draw, Tom. He'd be a draw. Okay, not only do you get a manager, but you're going to get a guy who puts people in the seats as well. Has he been in public? Has he said anything lately? Has he been out there publicly saying anything?
Yeah, he's been doing some interviews. I mean, obviously, he really regrets what he did in like throwing a punch at a TV commentator in the airport. I should really laugh, but I mean, it's just such a bizarre way to get fired from the job. Yeah, he said he's taking a bit of time off, but you know, he's going to come back to the game. He wants to coach again soon, and he's going to come back better than he was.
Yeah, and somebody
really well with the experience behind him.
Yeah, and he's hanging on the periphery, him and his agent, and somebody's going to struggle with the team in the Mexican League, and he's going to get offers. I don't think there's any question. Jesus Corona, who had a very, very good Gold Cup, I like this player a lot. His agent now is putting out there that Porto's interested in him. There's nothing here that I would think that would make me think that this isn't true. Do you think it's a potential that he ends up there?
Yeah, I think so.
And would that be a good move for him?
Yeah, I think Quaresma, the winger, I think he's left now. I think he's gone to Turkey, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there's an opportunity there for somebody to come in. I think Tecatito Corona is, you know, he's really come on a lot in the last couple of years. I mean, even when he was back in Mexico, he was, you know, people had him marked as a really big talent. And I think he's got a massive future in both the national team and in Europe. I mean, it's his rate of development more than anything and his maturity that he's showing. I think he's exciting people down here and obviously in Europe as well. And I think the Porto would be a great club for him to continue that development and alongside another Mexican named Hector Herrera, so which would be an excellent link for him. So yeah, I think Tecatito, there's a lot of hype around Mexican players, especially in Mexico, but I think Tecatito's one that's kind of been a bit quiet. He's gone to a small club in 20 in Holland and he's just been kind of working hard on the without the pressure, without the spotlight of the Mexican press, and I think he's benefited greatly from that.
And Twente has got some financial problems. Portuguese newspaper saying that Porto potentially could pay up to $10 million for this 22-year-old. He's young. You mentioned Hector Herrera playing at Porto, Raul Jimenez at Benfica. There's a couple other Mexican players in the league. Listen, Tom, as always, tremendously well-informed. You're such a great guest for the show, and I thank you so much, as always, for coming on the program.
No problem, Glenn. Yeah, I always enjoy talking Fucking soccer. Nothing better.
Give us your Twitter handle as usual, because I put it out there tonight, but give us your Twitter handle.
Yep, it's at Mexico World Cup.
He's Tom Marshall, ESPN FC. He's been a wonderful guest for the show. Tom, we look forward to talking to you soon, and continue to have a great time down in Guadalajara.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. You too.
All right, that's Tom Marshall. We'll wrap it up here tonight. Quick reminder here, it's Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc, Facebook, Soccer Matters. That's where you get all the podcasts. Don't forget, each and every week, you can head over to HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Also, Argentina-Bolivia tickets. They are going fast. You want to be at this game. This is a memorable, historic moment for soccer in the city of Houston, Texas. Go to BBVACompassStadium.com. Get your tickets for Argentina and Bolivia. For producer Michael Carroll, I'm Glenn Davis. Have a great night.
ESPN 97.5.